Welcome to episode 22 of the Harry Potter Lexicon podcast. My name is Steve Vanderark, and I'm the creator and editor-in-chief of the Harry Potter Lexicon.
And I'm Nick Moline, the Lexicon's tech wizard.
Tech wizard, good name for it. Especially because right now, Nick has been working very, very hard, as we said, on things like the timelines and so. But rather than talk about that, there are some other new things going on with the Lexicon. For example, I have been lately finally tackling the big problem of how to put some of the maps on the site, which has been like a big challenge for me of how I'm going to... Because there are just certain sections of the Lexicon I couldn't figure out how to move them over.
Right.
Yeah, and that was a big one. So I don't know whether, you know, people have been trying to figure out what happened to the Atlas. We used to have the Atlas of the Wizarding World, and we had all these different maps and things. Well, I mean, we still have them. But,
I don't even remember that part of the Lexicon. I remember small maps, like a map of Hogwarts and stuff like that, but I don't remember any, like, larger scale maps.
Well, you know, I don't know if they were so much larger scale or just larger scale than fits on one of our new pages.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we had like there's a guy by the name of Nick the Hermit, which, you know, it's one of those things. This fella wrote these beautiful essays for us, and this is probably what, 10, 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I no longer have his email address. I don't even know his real name, because that happens in fandom. You know people by their online names. And I would love to get a hold of this guy. And just, you know, because he's got these great essays on the Lexicon, and he had made these beautiful maps of, to a little background, he's from Britain. His, I forget who is his aunt, his grandmother, somebody lived in one of these neighborhoods just like is being described in Privet Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Even in the right area. And as he points out, the houses in Privet Drive have to be built before World War II, because there is a chimney and a fireplace in the kitchen, which simply would not be after World War II. The housing changed, and that simply would not have existed that way. And so, you know, his grand—I'm going to say grandmother, just because I think that's what it may have been—lived in that kind of that neighborhood. And so he actually went around, and he said he actually packed a trunk and walked to try to get a sense of scale in that neighborhood. And he drew the most great, the most beautiful, or didn't draw them. I think they actually created them with some graphic software. But these maps of Privet Drive and of what the house is like, because his grandmother lived in a house just like has been described.
Can I just say, I love the passion that Harry Potter fans have, that he would go through the trouble of packing a trunk. It's one thing to walk to try and get an idea of the scale, but he would pack a trunk, not just an empty trunk either. He had to pack the trunk and carry it behind him just to get an idea how far Harry could walk.
Exactly. Isn't that cool? And then so his map is like, okay, granted, we are never going to have, okay, we know that, blah, 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 blah. But his map is probably going to be as accurate as anything anybody's going to come up with. Mm-hmm. To what that real neighborhood would be like.
Yes.
Well, man, I would love to be able to properly... I mean, I credit him as Nick the Hermit, which is the way that he signed his stuff, but I'd love to be able to just chat with the guy and find out, you know, and I guess I assume it's a guy, could be a girl, but, you know, just all this work that he did and the writing that he did and the research. And so anyway, point being that those were some of the maps that were not brought over to the new Lexicon. But I did bring the first one of those over. There's like five or six. He's got floor plans of the house and everything. Again, based on his grandmother's house and her neighborhood. So I'm bringing those over now. So we are going to start having our maps as part of our current site. Because, you know, I do see people still using the legacy site, which is... And part of me is that if I look at it, they're using pages which don't exist in ArcSight, so, you know, what else can you do? But so I'd like to try to start moving that stuff over so that they can be seeing it in a better format, you know. So,
all right. What else we got?
The big question of spoilers, of course, because we had Cursed Child, and we have spoilers. We actually have, and this again, this is where you get the Tech Wizard emblem. Because I started talking to you about about needing a spoiler alert on the Cursed Child stuff, and next thing you know, you've got something worked out where Cursed Child spoiler thing appears at the top of those pages. That's pretty cool. So I've used that with the mechanism you built to create a spoiler alert for Fantastic Beasts film information. So that should be kicking in. So I guess that's important. But once we get those.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, but we have some, but we haven't been putting them in. I've just basically waited. I figured,
yeah.
I'm not. I know that probably other websites are, you know, everything they find they're putting on already. But I would rather kind of wait and just do it all at once and kind of. Otherwise, you know, some of the things that we guess or assume or whatever might not actually be correct, and I'd rather just wait. So, but now here's the question: how long do we go before we take the spoiler off Cursed Child?
I figure give it 6 months or so. I mean, okay. That's a great thing is that we can just flip it off at any given moment. We make mm-hmm. one, we go and make an edit and we leave the icon and mm-hmm. the spoiler alert goes away.
Yeah, because it's tied to the icon.
Yeah.
So as long as it has the icon on it for, we call the icon 19 years later. So as long as it has a 19 years later icon on it, it gets a spoiler alert. And so, yeah, I guess so. There's absolutely no reason we have to. I mean, there's no. It's no big deal. We could leave it on for years if we wanted to, but so.
Yeah, but since so much stuff is coming out, mm-hmm. you know, at some point you're going to want to.
There's going to be red banners at the top
there's
of it.
Red
better
half
one,
of the pages. Red better two, red better three. Get to a page about Newt's Commander, and it's somehow going to have like four red banners under it.
Yeah, okay. Should we agree that we are going to take the spoiler alert off for the first Fantastic Beasts movie when the second one comes out, if not before?
That would presume, of course, we have separate icons for each movie.
Am I going to do that? I don't know. Have you heard, are the movies like, is time-wise, are they just like run concurrently? Is the next one just follow right after the one before, kind of like the original films?
You know, I don't know. There's apparently a lot of, you know, here is your spoiler alert. What I do hear about is that apparently, and this kind of goes into our next section here, there's going to be mention of Dumbledore and Grindelwald. So, right. and there's even going to, you know, one of the posters that came out recently actually has the Deathly Hallows sign on it.
Yeah, and it shows up in the trailer too. So,
I didn't see it in the trailer. I might have just missed it though.
Okay, wait a minute. Are we doing spoilers if we talk about the trailer?
I guess I don't know. Is that a spoiler?
I don't think that's because I always figure
go watch
once
the trailer.
Okay,
there you go.
Go watch the trailer. It's too late. We just wrecked it for you. But do go watch the trailer. But yeah. You know, but that is true. Fantastic Beasts is as you know, grown to monumental proportions.
Right.
And we don't know if it's going to be Fantastic Beasts is going to be part of the name of every one of these
right.
movies.
Let's first go ahead and say what we've got here in our What's New. It's been announced that there's going to be 5 movies in
right.
In this Fantastic Beasts franchise.
Right. And since Grindelwald's name got pulled in, do we assume, I think a lot of people do, that it's going to be taking us from the middle of the 1920s to the middle of the 1940s and see the big, you know, young Dumbledore fight Grindelwald and all that kind of stuff, the big duel, that's going to be the end of it?
As much as I hope so.
Well, but the reason I'm asking is 5 movies, it's got to cover 20 years.
Right.
Because it's 1926, right?
And the question is, and if it is going all the way to the battle between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, well, that's back... we always presume that's somewhere in Europe, right? If not necessarily Britain.
Right.
We always presumed it's somewhere over there. So
sure. Well, yeah, it has to be because wasn't there somewhere? I think there was a comment or something about Grindelwald was he rose to power in Europe, not in Britain.
Yeah.
But it was like an international thing because Rowling said something about the fact that she's at least, and I think that I don't think she had all this kind of worked out ages ago when she first was talking about it. When people say, "Well, you have that at 1945," is it just a coincidence that that's, you know, World War II? And she said, "Oh no, I like to think that, you know, that conflict also spills over into the Wizarding World."
Right.
And so, you know, so I think that if you look at it that way, and if Grindelwald is getting pulled in 1926, it just seems reasonable and logical that that's the end goal, is to finish off that story. I mean, if you weren't going to go to that point, why would you bring it up?
Right. And the other thing is, if we're talking about, okay, so she says it's going to be 5 movies.
Yeah.
The first one is named Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Right.
Is the second one Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them 2, or is it a completely different name, or is it Fantastic
right.
Beast
and
something and else?
And something else. I mean, there's obviously precedent for that.
There is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what would be awesome, I think, is if the whole franchise is Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Let's make that assumption, right?
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't it be amazing if each movie, or maybe each couple of movies, is set in a different locale worldwide, and we actually get the worldwide wizarding community?
Oh, that would be really awesome.
Like,
yeah, that I would be okay with that.
I mean, we have what we know about, was it 7 or 9 schools, right? Wouldn't it be great if each movie was just in a country, in that country, wherever that other school, next school is, and then in that year leading up to the movie, we get stuff like we got for, you know, the history of magic in North America and Makuza and Ilvermorny, and we actually start getting that kind of canon for each movie for a different locale until we actually have an idea what the entire world is like in the wizarding community.
Yes, I'd be okay with that.
I would too.
Yes. All right, so we have that sorted out. Yeah, no, that would be really cool.
Joe,
that
that's what
really
we want
cool.
it to be. So if that's not
yes,
what it
thank
is,
you.
Go rewrite it, please. Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure she's right now going, oh, I'm so glad they suggested that.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Wonderful. So, anyway, so there is that. There's the 5 movies. There's this whole... oh, did you see the new game?
Yeah, the mobile game, right?
Yeah, the new mobile game, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Cases from the Wizarding World or something like that.
Yeah, that's not a long title at all.
Well, let's face it. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is a long title.
Yeah,
but
so you may as well just
part of,
more.
But interestingly enough, Fantastic Beasts is part of that title, not Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Hmm.
The reason I'm saying that is because that could suggest that Fantastic Beasts is the lead-in on all the stuff. So Fantastic Beasts and such, Fantastic Beasts, Cases from the Wizarding World, etc.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we don't know all that much about it other than it looks like it's a choose-your-own-adventure game type thing. Or
The game itself, yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah,
of course, I'm looking forward to playing it. And, of course, you know, the game we talked about last time, playing the
virtual reality one.
Yeah, the Daydream one.
Mm-hmm. Right, sure. Okay. Yeah, so there's good stuff coming. You know, and I mean, honestly, I thought, you know, there's a big deal about Cursed Child. I think that we are in for an onslaught. I think, for the Lexicon, what I do is when something new came out, like with Cursed Child, is I start a spreadsheet of all a listing all the things we have to create entries for and all this kind of thing. I mean, If you think about the scale of the Harry Potter Lexicon website, that was created over, you know, almost two decades. And if you think about every time a new book would come out, the sheer quantity of stuff that would have to get added was daunting. And I remember when I first brought in another editor was when Order of the Phoenix came out. Because that's when I realized that, whoa, I just can't handle this. It's just too much stuff. And so that feeling, I'm kind of getting that same feeling of like, oh my goodness, what is this? What is going to happen now? Because 5 movies and of course we talk about what are we going to do as far as canon goes and what's canon and what isn't. But a lot of it is, you know, if nothing else, the script.
Right.
And so, you know, we're going to have a lot of new stuff to add.
Yeah, aren't you glad that it's now a database and can have multiple
definitely,
users?
Definitely, definitely. I'm also glad I have a lot of wonderful editors because they do a lot of great work, and there's no way I'd get it done myself, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But so that's going to be exciting when that all starts to come. And,
you know,
and
it already has, right? I mean, just think, this has been, we keep talking about it, but it's like we had this long dry spell, and then mm-hmm. suddenly, you know, Joe
yeah,
decided
I know.
To just, you know, deluge
yeah.
on us rather than...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I almost felt like we were going in the opposite direction for a while there when Pottermore sort of took a turn for the,
yeah.
you know, the fan site side. And But yeah, absolutely. But I was, what was I just thinking? Oh, the whole question of canon. Because if you look at the trailer, there are people sitting there in, I don't know, it's like Grand Central Station, but I think it's probably the MACUSA headquarters, and they're reading a newspaper called The New York Ghost. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which immediately brings up the question that we've been trying to figure out what to do about all along. Did Rowling come up with that, or did the art department come up with that? Yeah, exactly.
I was kind of hoping
it wouldn't hit us upside the head right from the first.
Well, hopefully the script will say, and so-and-so was reading an issue of the New York Ghost. In which
that is what I'm hoping. I thought that same thing. Yeah. I'll wait till I see that script, because that's going to help us make a determination. But the thing is, we just don't know. I mean, we really don't know which things she actually named and which things the art department came up with, and you know, it's going to be
complicated. Well, it's just like with the existing movies, right? I mean,
right, exactly.
You know, we don't know. You know, we don't know so much stuff in there, but we know she came up with some of it. It's always been an issue. Like,
sure.
Remember, we all had a huge debate when it was announced that she wouldn't let him put a graveyard in one place because there's a graveyard somewhere else. We all just crazy about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's and we're going to have that over and over and over again. So yeah. At least I'm hoping, when we get a hold of the script, that will something that will help us to some extent.
Right.
At least in our first round of things that we add to the lexicon, that we're going to know for sure this is from Rowling because it's got her name on it. But anyway. Okay. Also, there's a company called Loot Crate. I don't know. I'm kind of embarrassed because I didn't know what this was.
You didn't know what Loot Crate is? Well, what Loot Crate is they make mystery box subscriptions. So you sign up for their subscription and you get, their main subscription is monthly. So you get, you know, pay a fee and you get a box every month. And inside that box is stuff from various different franchises. And with their main box, each month has a theme. Like this month's theme is horror. So I skipped this month because I don't like horror. And so this month's theme, it's horror, and it has stuff from Saw and The Walking Dead and stuff like that. Huh?
Nothing. I'm not into that stuff either.
Me neither. I skipped October. You know, I skip every October. That's just what it comes down to. Last month was Speed, and it had stuff from The Flash, and it had stuff from Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So every month they have a theme and then they have stuff from various franchises. And a lot of it is exclusive stuff that they make themselves.
Okay.
And perhaps the coolest thing about it is when they want to make this stuff themselves, they don't start by getting permission. They start by making something and then they go to the company and say, hey, we want to make this. You know, can we get the licensing fee? And then so they have a surprisingly successful rate of doing that.
Okay. So the reason we bring this up is because now they have a new one. So because you can get different ones, right? What you're talking about is sort of a generic one.
So there's a generic one. There's actually two generic ones. There's the and then they have specialty ones. So there was a specialty one for Halo, the game series. There's a specialty one for Firefly. And now there's going to be there's a new specialty one for The Wizarding World.
Okay, does that also come every month or something like that, or is that just one thing?
The Wizarding World one is going to be bi-monthly.
There will be more than one of them.
Yes, the specialty crates tend to be bi-monthly. And they tend to be on alternate. So like this month, the Halo one came out, so next month will be when the Harry Potter one will come out, or the Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts, and anything else in the Wizarding World.
All right, and the reason that's important to me particularly is because we are affiliated with them.
Yeah,
and so because they contacted me and that and they want to be affiliated with the Lexicon, and so I said looked into it, talked to you. You said no, we got to do this, but I had to be honest that, not to them, but to you, that I wasn't quite exactly sure what this was. So I'm glad you're explaining that. So you have gotten this before.
Yes, I've been a subscriber to their main crate and one of their, they have an add-on crate they call Loot Wear. I've been a subscriber to that since April 2015.
So you really know what this is because you've, so, oh, Okay, I'm a little jealous now. Next time I see you, I want to play with all that stuff. But so anyway, but we are affiliated, which means that when we have the Wizarding World or any of these, if you decide that you would like to order that, you can actually go through our the Lexicon website, and you can order it. I'm not making any sense here, am I?
No, okay. So officially the place to go to for people who are just listening to the podcast, if you want to go directly, is lootcrate.com/HP Lexicon.
Right, got it. Okay, we'll, yes, I did know that.
We'll put a link up on the website as well, both in the show notes for this episode and in our Support the Lexicon page.
Right.
And so you want to use that link, you know, lootcrate.com/HP Lexicon, and then you want to use promo code HP Lexicon. If you do that, you'll get $3 off your crate. And from what I understand, it's $3 off forever. If you subscribe, $3 off every single time.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, wonderful.
And at the same time, you'll be supporting us. You know, as long as you use that link and let them know how the, how you found them, then you'll be supporting the Lexicon.
Great. Because we would like to, and we talked about this last time too, is that we really do need to... really encourage people to support the podcast and the website. We really do not ever want to put advertising on that on the Lexicon, and so this is a great way that if you're thinking about doing that anyway, that you can subscribe to Loot Crate, any of the ones that they send, and do it through the Lexicon through that that link, which is lootcrate.com/ HP Lexicon, and use the promo code HP Lexicon, and that will support our podcast and also the website, which is, I think, a really cool thing. So
very cool. I'm very much looking forward to getting the, like, even before you got, even before they talked to you, I had already ordered the Wizarding Crate, both me and Barbara. So.
Okay, so basically what we're going to have to do at that point then, when you get that, is we're going to have to do another video podcast and watch you open it.
Yeah, both me and Barbara got separate crates. I got Ravenclaw, she got Hufflepuff. So we'll open them both.
Oh, you can do it. You can do it by the house.
Yes, when you subscribe, they ask you which house you are.
Cool. Okay.
They don't make you go through the Potter War test. They just ask you,
and they believe you. Okay.
They believe you.
Well, that's great. Okay, good. Well, yeah. By all means, do that if that's something that you're interested in doing. And do it through our website, through that. Not through our website, but through that link, so that you can support the show. Also, if you think get a chance to check out the on the Lexicon menu, which is the little triangle that's next to the words Harry Potter Lexicon up at the top of every one of our pages, you can see a page there that says Support the Lexicon, and if you go there, you can see a couple other really great ways to support us. The Patreon subscription is a great way to do it. Also, if you ever shop on Amazon, just start your shopping there on that page. Go ahead and do whatever shopping you normally do. You don't have to buy the items that show up on our support page. And some small percentage of what you buy goes to the Lexicon. Doesn't cost you any extra. You just go right ahead and do that. So, all right, very cool. I cannot wait to see what's in that loot crate. That sounds
really
cool.
Me neither. I'm itching to open it up. So. Mm-hmm.
But when you get it, you will not be opening it, will you?
No, I will wait. I will be patient.
No, you will wait until we can... Right, okay, very good. All right, well, let's talk canon. Let's talk... I did promise last time we were going to talk about Draco Malfoy, and I was thinking about that today, and it actually reminds me of when I was at the con in Las Vegas. I think it was Lumos. I think that's the one in Las Vegas. And I had made it known just by talking to some people that I was willing to talk about Snape. And there were a lot of people that really wanted to hear me talk about Snape because I had always been the... You know, very vocal in my condemnation of Snape, as I talked about Harry Potter, which I did at a lot of conventions back then, and when I had said that I was going to talk about Snape, a lot of people turned up just to see what I was going to say, because I think they all expected me to just say what a horrible person he was. Remember, this is before the end of the series, although I still would say he's a horrible person, even though we're at the end of the series, but. It kind of reminds me of that, because this time we were going to talk about Draco Malfoy.
All right. Let's talk about Draco.
Really? I'm glad you sound so enthusiastic, because I have to be honest with you, if it hadn't been for Cursed Child, I would never even catch myself saying that. Let's talk about Draco Malfoy.
Well, because you know, even before Cursed Child, I would say, let's talk about Draco Malfoy and just spend the time talking about how much I hate Draco Malfoy. And
yeah, exactly. Because, and I think this comes from, okay, when I was reading the books, starting with the first one, and let's be honest, in that first one, he's basically just the bully.
Right.
You know, he's not any sort of character, really, because that first one is all stereotypes, and it was written that way. And it wasn't until much later that he even got a personality. But I remember then, particularly Goblet of Fire, I think, is when Hermione's teeth get really enlarged with that Densuego spell.
Yes.
And he just says, well, I don't see any difference. And that right there, of all the things, and I think it was because
actually,
I was
I don't see any difference was actually Snape who said that.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
We were talking about Draco. It was Snape who said
that. Right, I guess I'm still going back to my whole thing about Snape.
Oh, okay.
Is that when I saw that from Snape, that to me was really kind of like what solidified my hatred of that character.
Absolutely.
Okay. And that same sort of feeling, I know I'm getting to this in a really roundabout way, but I have that same sort of feeling about Draco Malfoy.
Yeah.
I think it comes from the fact that at that time I was a teacher of middle school kids, and you know, I had no tolerance for bullying. It was a huge problem, psychological or whatever, but I had no sympathy for bullying. And especially for somebody who would, you know, make fun of, you know, like Snape makes fun of Hermione's looks, which, I'm sorry, as an adult man making fun of some, you know, teenage girl's looks, you just don't do that. And Draco mocking Harry because he doesn't have a family to go home to at Christmas time. You know, those are the kinds of things that just really hardened me to those characters. And so, yeah, I got there eventually. I knew what I was going for.
Yeah.
But, you know, but you see what I mean? Is that that was kind of where I came at the Draco Malfoy character, just like the Snape character.
And you know, Jo's the same way, right? I mean, you know, she's like, she's always wondering why people love Draco so much. She's commented before that she, you know, thinks that a lot of why so many people love Draco Malfoy is because they are attracted to Tom Felton. I guess this is girls, but
predominantly, yeah,
predominantly.
Well, and I think he's a really good looking guy, but that's okay.
It's sure. Apparently he's going to be on Flash this year. I'm looking forward to that.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, but. And I think a lot of that's true. I mean, that's true for a lot of characters, right? I mean, that the movie versions of them seem to color people's perceptions, especially fans who are primarily movie fans.
And I guess in that case, and I don't mean this in a mocking way, but if you are a young girl, I don't mean young girl, but a young lady, a younger fan, female fan, mm-hmm. you're going to notice that that's, you know, a good-looking guy. I have no problem with that.
No.
But that's not Draco,
no.
You know, any more than Emma Watson is Hermione. And in fact, Emma Watson doesn't look like Hermione.
No.
She's way too, I mean, and she should be more calm, more plain looking.
And Tom Felton doesn't look like Draco. I mean.
No, I don't think so. Well, although, you know, I have to say, at first he just looked at me with the hair slicked back and everything, and I just thought he looked kind of comical. By the time you get to Half-Blood Prince, I mean, he's starting to look sinister to me.
Sinister, yes, you know? But the book's always referring to him as being pale, almost white. And,
that's true.
While there are times when he looks that way in the movies, it's...
Well, let's face it, Half-Blood Prince, the whole thing looks pale and gray and
blue. Yeah, that's
because
they put a filter on the whole thing. It's like watching it's like watching the entire movie through on Instagram. But
yeah, you keep going trying to adjust the color on your set. You know,
what's wrong with this thing?
Then you go walk and watch the first one again. It's like, whoa! Candy colored.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. You were telling me how wonderful Tom Felton is. Go ahead.
But, you know, he's, you know, the books always describe him as there, you know, it actually does refer to him as being attractive, but attractive in a sickly way.
He had a pointed face. Doesn't he say he has a pointed face?
You know, it says he's pale, almost sickly sometimes. It mm-hmm. refers to him as. And so. You know, and he never looks like that. Probably one of the biggest problems I have. You mentioned Half-Blood Prince. He doesn't look right in Half-Blood Prince at all. And in the book Half-Blood Prince, he is getting more and more wary looking throughout the the books, and and Harry notices that.
Yeah, he should start looking. And okay, we do have the big crying in the bathroom scene. Okay, granted, but and we do have a lot of angsty moments while he walks around in the castle and everything. But in the I guess the way I start to think about it is the film version to me, he doesn't ever lose it. Well, he has the one scene in the bathroom, but aside from that, he's fine. He's just moody,
right?
You know, walking around looking glum. But anyway, I guess the point is that Draco Malfoy in the books, I don't have any sympathy for. I don't have any positive feelings about. At no point does he do anything that makes me think good about him. I've read things online. People say, well, it's not his fault. And yeah, it is. It's too his fault.
Absolutely his fault. You know, it's like, he's a terrible person.
You can say, oh, it's his upbringing. Like, yeah, well, everybody's got their upbringing, but that doesn't mean yet there's an excuse, you know, in my opinion. But anyway, so here, the reason that this seems so interesting to me, like I said, is because of Cursed Child.
He's a very different, but at the same time, the same character in Cursed Child.
I really would like to see the play.
I would too. I think that, you know, especially, you know, a certain scene between him and Harry. Spoiler alert.
The scene between him and Harry, which I feel like is not just thrown at you, but it builds up naturally over the course of the play. Like, I believe they get there to that conversation with Jenny too, about, you know, him, you know, kind of wishing he could have had friends the way that they had friends. Yeah. That conversation doesn't come at the beginning. You have to get there. You have to travel from the beginning of the play to the point where they can have that conversation. And I think that felt, considering how quickly plays go by,
right?
We're not talking about a 600-page book here. We're talking about, you know, two and a half, three hour plays, which is not much in a play form. And considering how quickly the whole play goes by and how many other things they're dealing with, I thought that was pretty well done, where we got to that naturally, that kind of coming to an understanding. And
I agree. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is, you know, back in the books, is that Harry's opinion of Draco changes considerably after Half-Blood Prince. And like, it's night and day, a different opinion when he and it's almost surprising why, because I mean, he's in this situation. Draco's trying to kill Dumbledore, and you know, and Harry just notices that that's not what he wants to do, and from that point on he thinks of Draco differently. And it's interesting in Cursed Child to see where he goes from the encounter between Draco and Harry in Deathly Hallows, right?
In Malfoy Manor.
I'm more thinking of, well, there's a Malfoy Manor one, but I'm also thinking about the encounter in the Room of Requirement with him and Crabbe and Goyle. And then, of course, what the whole thing that happens between Harry and Draco's mom.
Right, but I think that the key really is that, because that's almost a backsliding to me. I think the key is the scene in Malfoy Manor, because you know Draco knew who that was.
Yes.
You know he did. And I still can't quite get my head around why he didn't. Well, I mean, I guess on the other hand, he did not say who it was, which to me showed something very different about that Draco Malfoy from the ones that we were seeing in the books, in the fourth book, fifth book, sixth book. That Draco Malfoy is not the same one who refused to identify Harry in Malfoy Manor. You know, there's a big change of personality there. And not like he's suddenly everybody their buddy and best friends, but something happened.
And I am curious to know where the relationship between Harry and Draco does change, because it's a big part of it is before Cursed Child.
Right. Well, because think about it. What changed between books six and seven? What is it that happened that Draco and Harry how I'm trying to think what I'm trying to get at here, because I don't know the answer to my question. Because the Draco in Malfoy Manor, what changed that? Why did he, was he just afraid of being wrong and getting in trouble with Voldemort? Was it the fact that he saw Voldemort destroying his family?
I think that was a big part of it. I think he saw, I mean, if you look, the Malfoys in Deathly Hallows are just a completely demoralized group.
They're a shell.
They're a shell of who they really are.
The only thing holding them together is Narcissa.
Yeah, and it's almost kind of funny because both of them spend all this time wanting Voldemort to be back, wanting to serve the Dark Lord, and then when they do, they've essentially ended up in a situation where, you know, they would have been better off if Voldemort never showed up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lucius is Peter Pettigrew.
Yes.
Lucius is, is Pierce Polkus. Lucius is the follower, the hanger-on, the toady, the smarmy one that just follows whoever's got the power.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a sense, Lucius, there's a bunch of these characters. I mean, Umbridge is the same way.
Yeah.
Although she's more evil down deep, but you know, she doesn't
evil.
Have
she
doesn't have a good side. Lucius has sort of a good side and a bad side, and he plays which they're both fake, and he just sort of does whichever one is necessary. Umbridge has a bad side and a bad side, and she plays them both. But
I mean, if Rowling comes out and releases something else that tries to redeem Umbridge, I'm just not going to buy it. I don't think.
No. Well, I'm not going to necessarily buy redeem anybody.
Yeah.
Because I don't think she redeems Lucius. I don't think. And again, this is not the film. They don't walk away. They end up in the Great Hall at the end, sitting there together at a table eating.
Yeah.
You know, the Malfoys don't walk away from the battle. Well, they maybe hid during the battle, but at the end of the battle, they don't leave Hogwarts. They stay there. Which is, you know, I'd like to find out what happened next. That'd be pretty important to me. But that Draco right there, again, is night and day different than the one in Cursed Child.
Yeah, very much so.
In
Cursed Child, the one scene that makes me assume that at some point they became kind of begrudging friends, because that duel, that is not a fight.
No.
That is playing.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing you do when you get ticked off at your best friend, so you throw something.
I'm not even sure it's that. If you, because they start joking with each other halfway through it. I mean that.
Okay, I would have to see it, because all I remember is, of course, I'm a little stuck on when I see it, is like, oh gee, how do they do that? You know, on stage.
I do that too.
So I had trouble reading it for what it really was, I guess, maybe, but I think that, you know, The for me, the biggest thing, the big reveal or the big change is Astoria. And I think that she is the thing that changed Draco thing. She is the person. She is the, I think when she came into Draco's life, something happened there. Because doesn't it say like that he had to defy his parents to marry her?
I'm not remembering that, but I'm not going to. Okay. You read it more times than I did, so.
I did, yeah, about seven or eight now. But I think that's what it's in. I think they didn't want him to marry her, and he defied them and married her anyway. Which means, okay, she has to be some pretty spectacular, and I'm not talking beautiful. I'm talking spectacular personalities. She must be an absolutely amazing person if he meets her and he is willing to go against what his parents would want in order to marry her. I mean, she has to be something pretty special, is what I'm thinking of. Think about Scorpius too in Cursed Child. Scorpius is not a Draco at all.
No, he's not.
And if Malfoy would have stayed the Malfoy of the original novels, I don't think he would have very likely had a son who was much different than he was when he was at Hogwarts.
Yeah, much like he was essentially a small mirror of Lucius.
Exactly. And so I think that this woman, Astoria, must have been incredible. I really feel like she is kind of the key to this whole thing, is that this woman must have done so much to affect him. Even when he met her and got to know her, that, I think, is what changed him. You know, and I mean, the incredible sad story of that relationship, but this incredibly cool kid that they came, because you can't not like Scorpius if you read the Cursed Child. I mean, he's by far, I think, the best character in the entire book.
Yeah, Scorpius is definitely a very likable character.
Yeah, he is. And,
which is
and
funny.
So,
it's interesting that Rowling would choose, after all this time of making us hate Malfoys in general, just hating the name Malfoy, mm-hmm. that she would choose to make such a likable Malfoy character.
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an almost in-your-face decision. But and such a dislikable Potter character. Because
yeah.
he doesn't care much for Albus.
No.
No, he's
I don't dislike Albus. I just don't.
I do. I admit it. I didn't like him. But again, I think you have to see it. I think you have to see the play, because I think the byplay of those two characters is what sells both of them. But Scorpius, as written, written on paper, has that charm and that self-effacing, and and I'm sorry, that comes from somewhere, and if any of it comes from Draco, it has to have been through a pretty strong filter of Astoria. I mean, she had to be the person who made him see the world in a new way, basically, and so much so that he marries her, because that's the man he wants to be, and that's the way I see it. And so then, I mean, I love the scene in Cursed Child where, they all end up standing up together because they're all going to take responsibility for what's going on and try to fix it. Not just Harry and Hermione, but then Ron, who doesn't even know what's going on. It's like, my kids aren't involved, but yeah, I'll stand up here too because these people are. So, and then Draco to stand up there as well. To me, that was, they're not, I don't know if they're friends, but.
Oh,
but
I think they're friends.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
And they could, but yeah. But okay. I don't know that they're friends yet.
I've got the book open here. Draco and Harry, they're definitely friends at this point. I mean, the banter in that battle.
I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can do it. Right, I don't know if I can go there.
All right. Oh. I'm sorry. Okay, hold on. I'm going to pull it up here.
Are you gonna read me stuff now and make me believe?
I am.
Oh, dear. Okay, I'm getting out the book too, because I'll beat you with canon. I don't know what page it's on. I'm gonna go. Okay, you look at that. I'm gonna look for the big battle at the end in Godric's Hollow and see if there's anything there that proves you otherwise.
All right.
Are you finding anything?
I am. I'm in Act 2, Scene 13. Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, you start getting it. So, right around. It's in the battle itself.
You're just making it up now, so you can't find it.
I do. Okay. Sorry, I had resized the window, so all of a sudden the pages were messed up.
And now it's the computer's fault.
Okay.
Clearly,
so,
you're inventing.
So starting with Flipendo, which we could have a whole conversation about Flipendo being canon.
No, please,
now.
No.
Draco, Flipendo, Harry is sent twirling through the air. Draco laughs. Keep up, old man. Harry, we're the same age, Draco. Draco, I wear it better. Harry, Brachiabido.
Okay.
That really the best you got? And then Draco, get this one. Mobile corpus, oh, this is too much fun.
Okay, you're winning the canon battle here, I would have to say.
They're playing.
Okay, I want somebody who's actually seen the play to weigh in on this at some point and let us know how they actually play that, because you could play that in really, really sarcastic and almost mean if you wanted to.
You
know, almost like this is just too much fun. I can get rid of you, you scum.
I don't think so. I'm sorry.
I know you don't think so, but you know
the lines are just too. They're too much.
Okay, we're going to have somebody who's seen the play kind of tell us the truth on this. But the point I guess I'm making, whether they're friends or whether they are now, you know, they're clearly in a different place. There's no question. They're definitely in a different place. And they're definitely not just this sort of grudging respect, or kind of what did Rowling refer to Christmas card friends is what Harry and Dudley are. They send Christmas cards to each other. That's basically it. And so, but clearly, there's more to it than that. For one thing, they are going to be part of this same relatively small culture and see each other a lot. But I guess I go back to this whole thing of this Draco is somebody that I can actually admire. Because of his relationship with his son, because of the conversation that the whole thing that when you find out about Astoria and the curse that from generations before that has come and you know manifested itself in her and she's going to die young, and then his comment about how she wanted to have a son not to continue the Malfoy line because he told her that. Because he didn't care if the line died with him. It didn't matter to him. All he wanted was to make sure that to have time with her. She wanted to have a child because she wanted him to have that child when she was gone. And I'm sorry, that to me is just like, I wish there was something in between in the 19-year difference between where we could meet this woman, because I think she's pretty incredible.
Well, you know, never say never.
Yeah, but
even
anyway,
if it's just an article on Pottermore about Astoria, I'd be good with that.
Right, and some background, and maybe some. But I don't know. I just think that she is the key to this whole thing. I think that she is what changed Draco. I think she is what got basically changed his worldview. You know, I mean, you meet people in your life like that. You meet people who you resonate with, and then you talk with, and you listen, and you learn, and you suddenly are seeing the world through new eyes. And there are people like this that you meet through your life, and she is that person for him.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it doesn't make me like Draco in the novels. Nothing's going to, you know. I mean, maybe if Draco would have decided to fight Voldemort in the final battle, in the Battle of Hogwarts, that might have made me, you know, feel differently about him personally at that point. But I guess looking back, I'm glad he didn't, because I don't think that would have been authentic. Right. Where if all of a sudden he finally would have been, you know, even though Harry did save his life, I don't think that would have felt authentic, because at that point he was a Malfoy. He was his father's son. And I think it took something as dramatic as Astoria coming into his life, which of course she's 2 years younger, which means she was at Hogwarts with these guys, with our heroes, if you will.
But
so
we never saw
2 years young. Yeah, 2 years young. Well, yeah, because but do you think she was a Slytherin?
I don't know. I mean, we don't know anything about her, really. I mean,
No. I mean, I would love to know. Was she a Slytherin?
Where did you find out she was 2 years younger? I don't remember seeing that.
Oh, that's I could look it up on the lexicon.
So could I. Astoria.
Okay, now we're racing to see who can look it up faster on our own website. Okay. But yes, I know that she was 2 years younger, and so she would have been along with like Dennis Creevy. Is that the same age group?
Dennis,
Time magazine. Article, Rowling Answers 10 Questions. That's the article that it was in. And that's where she was first introduced. Although she was first introduced on a handwritten time family tree, and it was spelled Asteria, A-S-T-E-R-I-A. But here's Rowling's actual writing on this. Astoria Greengrass, younger sister of the Greengrass family. We meet Daphne Greengrass, part of Pansy Parkinson's Slytherin posse, in Book 5 when Hermione takes her OWLs. Neville marries Hannah Abbott. Oh, I guess that's all it says there. But I know that it's in there because I wouldn't have put it into the lexicon if it wasn't. So, but so anyway, that is where that is where that comes from. So, and in Cursed Child. But
there was a Greengrass mentioned during the OWLs. So
yeah, that's her older sister Daphne, which interestingly enough, in the original 40, the original class list, she was listed as Queenie Greengrass, but the name obviously changed. But so anyway, so I guess that's my, and I don't know what you think about that, but that's my theory. That's my feeling on it, is that it was Astoria meeting her, that whole situation, and going through the loss of Astoria and her wishing for Draco and Scorpius to be able to be their family together moving on without her, which is why she wanted to go ahead and have that baby, even though it really, really weakened her and probably shortened her life somewhat. And so that, to me, is probably the key to why I would have to grudgingly say, and I'm going to say this, you know, don't take this out of context, but I do actually like the character of Draco at this point.
I do too. In Cursed Child, I like Draco, and it's nice to see such a change. Heck, in Cursed Child, I like Snape, which is surprising to me.
Although, I don't know. Yes, I know what you're saying. But to me, that scene felt a little bit like, let's just throw every character we can think of into this thing so that the fans go, oh dear, there's Snape. We didn't think he was going to be in this.
Yeah, no doubt that he should not have been in there. But
So then to me, it was like, okay, let's quick write it so that he's Snape, but we kind of, you know, have this future. This is what he turned out like, and we actually like him after all, kind of a thing. And okay, I was starting to get a little addled at that point. It's like, I don't know. But so Snape, yes, I guess we do kind of like him in there, but not the same as Draco, who's, of course,
not the same at all.
On screen. So.
Plus, this is a Snape in an alternate universe that doesn't exist anymore. So.
Yeah, how weird is that?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, because, and that's, okay, we're not talking timelines,
no,
dude.
We're not.
but yeah, there is that whole thing of, as far as Snape goes, are we seeing a Snape that was a logical extension of the Snape that we saw, the one that died in, the Battle of Hogwarts? Or is this such a warped, changed timeline that it's not even the real Snape? The Snape that we know would never have become that person.
Right. I don't know. I can see it. I can say that. Let me put it this way. The way he was semi-redeemed in Cursed Child lends to my belief that he was never redeemed in the books. A lot of people think, a lot of people seem to think that his, you know, Snape's memory, you know, the Prince's Tale somehow vindicates him from his life of evil, or at least nastiness, not necessarily evil.
Being
but,
a jerk?
Yeah, I was. No, it does not. I'm sorry. You know, I have said before, I'll say again, Snape does not love Lily. He thinks he does.
Right.
But that's not love.
And to be fair, I mean, because Rowling refers to it as love on occasion, although she would say, I think, the same sort of a thing, but it was his version of love. It's the best he could do. And now I'm being very, very kind to him, I will say.
Yeah.
Because I'm one of the, I agree with you that was not what real love is.
He's a stalker.
But in a sense, he is not capable of more than that. And so within his limited range, that was as much love as he could do.
Right. And his but his description in Cursed Child, you know, it seems that, you know, the way this alternate Snape is, after Harry's death, after he couldn't save Lily's son, he started... When he decided that the only way he could live up to her is by following his things, and then eventually he believed it too when he took her challenge, that's what vindicates him. Because
you know, the weird thing is that is like this is a man who has no life of his own.
Yeah.
Other people totally influence him, and he lives his whole life totally as a puppet for other people, mm-hmm. for Dumbledore, for this. I mean, I'm sorry. Lily was, I'm sure, a wonderful person. She's been dead for decades. You can let go. You know, I mean, that's not healthy. That's not normal. That's disturbing. That you are so completely, utterly devoted to someone who has been dead for years. That you're, I mean, that's almost like Psycho, the movie Psycho,
yeah.
level of weirdness.
Very much so.
You know?
But the
Now we're not doing a Snape episode next. I'm just going to say.
All right.
Nick is like, well, why not? We're on a roll now. Yeah. But
just keep recording it. We'll slice it in half.
Yeah, because it's we'll make 5 podcasts out of it.
Yeah. But suddenly this podcast just stops, and everybody wonders where the end is. To be continued. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh dear. Well, okay. Look, well, we better hang this one up because I think we've kind of come around to some conclusions of our own on Draco, and I think that we agree. I think you agree with me that the books do not redeem him, do not vindicate him. He is still, to just put it bluntly, a bad person at the end of the 7th book.
Absolutely.
He is not somebody to be fond of.
He is a bad person at the end of the 6th book. At the end of the 7th book, he's just a pitiful person. You know,
yeah,
not,
I guess I would say that.
Not that I pity him, just that he is a pitiful,
pitiful
person.
Yeah, and somehow from there to Cursed Child, this man...
He turns his life around.
Change, well, through the influence, I believe, of a woman. And I think Astoria is this tremendous part of this story, which I really wish I could hear. I'd love to hear... That story.
Well,
so.
there's so many Harry Potter stories
we wish we could hear. Go ahead.
So, while I do think Astoria is probably clearly a wonderful person, I think he thinks so. I think Scorpius thinks so. So I don't discredit that Astoria is. I am not certain that she is the total reason for him changing. For me, I think if you ask Draco, it's friendship itself. Either it's friendship with Astoria, friendship with Harry, friendship with others, where when Draco learns to create real relationships, that's when he does. And I think, you know, that beginning of Act 2, Scene 15, where Draco is trying to explain to Harry that keeping their children apart is the worst thing for either one of them. I think that's because
he's learned the value of true friends.
Yeah, he actually says that's what this is about. Not about my son being evil, because as much as you might take the word of a haughty centaur, you know the power of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a really good point. So, yeah, I would say that after the death of Crabbe in the Room of Requirement... And when they both basically rejected him, his one group of friends that he would call friends.
Yeah. Right here in this exact same thing, claims that he never thought of them as friends.
No, they've been
end
of the broomstick from
I always envied them, you know, Weasley and Granger. I had Ginny, Crabbe and Goyle, Draco, two lunks who wouldn't know the end of a broomstick from another. You, the three of you, you shone. You liked each other.
Yeah.
You had fun. I think somewhere along that line, he learned to have relationships.
And now you're making me feel sorry for him, because all the way at the beginning, he tried to be friends with Harry. He just did it wrong. Okay, shut up. No. Not going there. No. I'll have to start reading fan fiction if I want to go there, I guess.
So.
All right. Well, we better wrap this up. That about does it for episode 22. Thanks again to Harry and the Potters for the use of the music that you hear at the beginning, at the end. Nick, let's sign off this way. What struck you from the world of Harry Potter lately?
Well, today I was listening. Yeah, I'm still listening to Order of the Phoenix. I'm doing it slowly. I'm listening to the OWL section. That's why I recognize the Greengrass name, even though I hadn't connected it before. you know, so I'm listening to that thing, and it just strikes me, how old is Professor Marchbanks? Because Professor Marchbanks... Because
she gave... Yeah, she gave Dumbledore his OWLs, didn't she?
Well, it says she gave him his NEWTs, but...
Oh, okay, well, that gives it a couple of years.
Yeah, because it's two years younger than she could have been. But she must be ancient. I mean, just...
Right.
And also...
Well, yeah, so that means what? What was he? This is about 1900?
Yeah.
Is that right about when...
Right.
So she was... a professor, and maybe at Hogwarts, in 1900. Let's assume she was at... So, we are talking almost 100 years later, she is still there giving...
Exams.
OWLs.
Yeah. That's,
wow.
That's a long time.
That's impressive.
Also, they refer to her as professor, but she is not... you know, she's not a teacher at the school.
No.
And there's no other place you can be a professor of. So she's,
no, but I'm guessing. My opinion on that is that if she was, let's say she was a professor at Hogwarts 100 years ago, that she would still could be called that sort
professor
of
professor emeritus type.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Because I mean, when I retire, I think people will still refer to me as a teacher because that's just kind of been my identity of my life. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, and I have to say, the something that struck me, I happened to see on YouTube from Vox, they have a great video on there, which I don't always like the videos you find on YouTube because I think sometimes people that do these don't really know Harry Potter. They're not hardcore fans, and so they are
right.
not. They're surprised by things that we're like, well, yeah, you know, or you'll see this. Oh, here's some great new theories. Like, no, we talked about that 15 years ago, kind of a thing. But this is a great one. This is called the video on YouTube is called Harry Potter and the Translator's Nightmare. Really
yes,
cool.
I saw
about...
it too. I saw it the other last night, and I'm like, oh, I need to send this video to Steve. But I guess you found it too yourself.
Yeah, no, it popped up on my YouTube because
yeah.
you know. And here's what's interesting because I know some of the translators and I talked to them quite a bit. One of them, I remember, I was talking with her about. What problem she ran into with translating the books because Rowling's wordplay and all this kind of stuff is you can see that's tricky to translate. A lot of it doesn't translate. It doesn't even translate into American English in some ways.
No,
you know, I mean, and so what she said was one of the hardest ones for her, and this isn't in the video, but this video reminded me of it. But watch the video; it's really fun. But what really was hard for her, this is the Portuguese translator. She said. The title of the chapter from Half-Blood Prince, Will and Won't, because of the sheer levels of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Will, because it was about Sirius's will. Won't, because all the levels of creatures saying won't, but also he won't be. I mean, it's just so layered.
It's a multi-layered word name, yeah.
And it's based on the will and won't, the combination of those two words. And I mean, it's just crazy. And so she said it just took her forever to figure out how to translate that chapter title.
Hmm.
And that really is what the first time it really struck me of like, oh my goodness, yeah, how would you translate that?
That's amazing.
And then to see this video is really fun because it talks about things that doesn't go quite to that level, but just talks about translating names. And you know, when we think about the alliteration, for example, of so many names in Harry Potter are alliterative. Severus
yeah.
Snape and things like this. But Severus Snape, also Severus Severe. Snape sounds like snake. You know, there's just so many different layers to those words in English.
Yeah, I saw that
and
in
then
that
to,
video they
to,
mentioned
yeah.
that one of the translators translated his last name to Python.
Right, because they could, because it could, you know.
You lose the alliteration,
the
but at least you get
idea.
That snake-like thing.
Right, sure. So anyway, so that's what struck me. So... All right, so that's kind of fun. We'll try to. I'll keep my eyes open and see what else, because there's all so much going on right now.
Yeah.
So many different things out there. This is, of course, do visit the Harry Potter Lexicon website. We are constantly updating and adding things. Nick, we are going to be getting timelines on there at some point, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great, and so that's www.hp-lexicon.org, so go visit that. That about wraps it up for now. So this is Steve Vanderek of the Harry Potter Lexicon.
And this is Nick Moline.
And thanks for listening.